Rich Kimble here, along with Kerry Haskell, Bruce Pratt, and joining us on the telephone line, well, he's one of our favorite folks to talk with. We had to get him on one more time before Kerry's departure. David Roth of Defector joins us. Hello, David.
Hey, how are you? It was a real pleasant surprise to hear Kerry's voice on the other end of the line. I thought I was going to have to learn a whole new producer.
Yeah, the whole new producer, that'll be me going forward.
Oh, great. I can start stealing myself for the prospect of, having you be on the other end of the line right away. Usually I get to ramp up, but you're at the football stadium right now, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, they moved the main Rhode Island game to tonight because of the impending effects of Lee.
So I knew about this because I talked to counterpart or whatever, but Justin McIsaac in New Hampshire, I talked to for his podcast yesterday. He's like a radio guy there and a fan of yours. I think he also has something to do with the UNH games. And he was telling me, he's like, you should really check with Rich. Also, you should check with your father-in-law because like there's really bad weather coming and really weird things are happening and you should make sure he's still doing the show. But I should have known it would take more than an extremely large hurricane and a rescheduled football game to get you to change course on this.
Absolutely. Justin's great, and he's one of the few play-by-play guys in college sports that is a former professional wrestler, so I have great admiration.
Yeah, I had a nice talk with him about his son is going to the university that's probably closest to where I grew up because it's a really good bowling program, which was like one of the only things I knew about William Patterson University. So we got to talk about like Division III North Jersey athletics in more depth than I think I was really frankly prepared to talk about.
All right, before we get to the somewhat important stuff, I want to get to the really important things. How was the Defector birthday party?
It was a good time. It's always a little weird, to have a birthday party for a website, but it was fun. We did some readings, and there was, a lot of people there who are, normal in every way, except for the fact that they would come to a party on a Wednesday night in the Lower East Side of Manhattan to talk about blogs with bloggers. I learned a really extraordinary thing from a guy that went to the same high school as me in the same smallish town in New Jersey about a childhood schoolyard game that I just got to write about on the website. So I've had, it was a real kind of a life-changing experience that a game that I knew by one name, he went to a different elementary school and knew it by a different, much sillier name, 2 miles away.
All right, I look forward to reading more about that. Let's talk a little sports. We were saying this early on. I'm not a big Deion Sanders fan, but I love the fact that he's shaking up the button-down world of college football.
Yeah, I think this is where I've landed on Deion, too. I find him exhausting from one moment to the next. He does cut a really good promo. Like, it's fun to watch him do a monologue, and that is not a common skill among college football coaches. Like, they're there mostly to impress car dealership grandees and boosters and stuff, whereas Deion's got he's got that television sizzle. He's just a very annoying individual, I think. But for now, I'm at this level, and this is sort of where Defectors landed institutionally, that he's annoying enough people that we don't like that we're sort of willing to extend the benefit of the doubt to him.
Oh, yes, yes. If the Nick Sabans of the world get annoyed, I'm all in on that. I love it.
Yeah, I think the question is he's already gotten, I don't know very much about Gene Norville, who's the Colorado State coach, but he's already, Deion, just by being Deion and wearing sunglasses indoors, was clearly driving Gene Norville insane. So we'll see where this goes by the time, I think sooner or later Colorado is going to run out of runway, and the fact that they're just smaller than all the other teams in their conference is going to hurt them. But they've been playing pretty well so far, and it's been, as with any other sort of wrestling heel type behavior, part of what you're looking forward to is the moment where he finally gets his comeuppance. It just might not happen until they play USC next month or something.
The Jets and Aaron Rodgers, I always felt it was doomed to failure. And then when you factored in Hard Knocks, you knew it was going to go south. This, even I didn't imagine a demise like this.
This is, so I'm not a Jets fan, but I am a Mets fan. I grew up in Jets fan country. I am used to teams whose names end in the letters ETS having incredibly bad and funny things happen to them, and I could not have imagined that this. I just did not think that this one was on the menu of possible options. And even after it happened, we were, you know, I was watching with some coworkers, and I was like, no, it's like a high ankle sprain or something. It's bad, but it's not. And they were all like, no, I think his season is over. Like, and it's hard to tell because Aaron Rodgers has had a look on his face that suggests that his season is over for like 3 years now. Like, whenever it was that he started, I don't know, listening to Joe Rogan's podcast or whatever, like, it's like his whole personality has darkened. But that is a real extraordinary turn of events. And the thing that was weird about that game is that the defense looked amazing. Like, they looked like the sort of team where even if you had 70% of Aaron Rodgers there with that team, then they're going to make the playoffs and they're going to annoy a lot of people all year long. And then it's just the one thing you can't do is put Zach Wilson in charge of it. And that is, we've got four more months of that coming our way.
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. I loved your piece on this Linda Yaccarino and the demise of the website formerly known as Twitter. It's ending in really the most perfect of ways.
Yeah, I have not been going on there as much. And I found it kind of easy. I think for a while I was sort of, because I'd been on Twitter for more than 10 years, and that's the sort of habit that you kind of back into, and then you realize belatedly that there might be some withdrawal symptoms involved. And I was worried about that, you know, that, like, what am I going to do without my little serotonin boost every time I make a pun or, you know, spoonerize the name of somebody who's on everybody's TV. And it turns out that if the site gets bad enough, it's actually quite easy to leave. And I have not had a hard time with it, but I have really enjoyed her posts because her job is basically to do the, you know, please disperse, nothing to see here routine after, like, Elon tweets, you know, whatever, the protocols of the elders of Zion or whatever. And that is, that's the job she signed up for. It's just an exceptionally demeaning job. And she is performing it with all the vigor of an AI. Like, the language and the style is basically indistinguishable from robot-generated content. So it feels right. Like, it feels just uncanny and dystopian enough to fit what's going on over there.
I mean, do you think she had to understand what the job was going to be going in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's any, I mean, this was what it was. I mean, that's sort of like the bit that I was trying to get at in the story, because you knew that this is the sort of thing where it's sort of like the way that, like, David Culley coached the Houston Texans last year. You know, like, he didn't do a bad job necessarily, but that was a really bad roster, and he knew that he was going to get thrown over as soon as they could, you know, hire somebody with a higher profile and fully get out from under some of their dead money. That is extremely unfair to David Culley, because he's like, you know, he took an NFL head coaching job, but I think he took it for the same reason that Linda Yaccarino took this job, which is like, I don't know, it's a CEO job at a big company. Like, there are not that many of those. But you can't anticipate that, like, I mean, she should have known a little bit, but Elon is getting worse at this, like, geometric rate that I think that even if she had this job and was like, all right, well, a lot of what I'm going to be doing is just putting on hip waders and, like, walking around in this garbage bog all day and then talking about how great it was, I think she probably underestimated how fetid the bog was, but that's common. I mean, I think I would have too, you know, like, I think even, you know, 6 months ago, I wouldn't have guessed that Twitter could achieve the level of bad vibes that it's achieved.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to share a post from a Nazi this weekend and for her to immediately tweet out, Shana Tova, friends.
Right, yeah. To all of our treasured Jewish users, obviously Happy New Year. And that is the official position of all of us here at X.com. Yeah, that is 100% the vibe right there. I think there's already, everybody's getting, like, you know, maybe about 300 or 400% more Elon Musk in the monitors than they signed up for these days. But this has been a really bad week for it, because that book is out and there's all these reviews of it and there's all these excerpts from it. And I should know better than reading it. It's like not the sort of thing where there's nothing that's going to surprise me about him at this point. But I did, in getting ready for that post, read a lot more stuff than I needed to. And it was like, if you spend more than 15 minutes of your life reading about Elon Musk, you are going to get a tummy ache for sure. Like, that is, there is just nothing good in there.
Would it be less painful to read Mitt Romney's book?
I feel like Mitt Romney is undergoing this reassessment that he's done nothing to warrant. But it's strange. I talk to my parents about this stuff every now and then, and they're MSNBC people. And they've always, my dad especially, who was like, I talked to him in 2012. Like, he was alive when that election happened. And he remembers what Mitt Romney said about half the country being moochers and all the, you know, things that he did when he was running Bain and all that. I mean, he's like a pretty lousy guy. He's just also, in a lot of ways, a decent man from one moment to the next. He just happens to have done bad things for a living for decades. But I don't know if it's the MSNBC stuff or if it's just that the rest of the party has rocketed into, you know, psychosis so quickly. But my father talks about him, you know, he's like, why wouldn't he caucus with the Democrats? Why would he, you know, if he's upset by these things, like, maybe he comes over and starts doing the honorable thing. And I was like, he's never done that, dude. He's not going to do that. He's going to literally retire instead of doing that. And while I can't say that I was trying to win that argument with my dad, I would have loved it if Mitt Romney followed whatever conscience he says he has and voted the way that he feels like he should. It definitely is, like, fitting that he would be like, wow, this stinks. I hate this job. I'm going to leave. I can't, you know, say that that's the wrong choice for him, but it is weird that he's going to, I think, be held up as, you know, sort of the last honorable man when, you know, except for, I mean, I guess January 6th, you can't really say that he's taken a especially difficult vote in a surprising way since he got to the Senate.
No, to me, it feels like Mitt Romney, he's angry that the awful things that the Republican Party have done during his time in the Republican Party aren't still being done in the nicer, quieter way they used to be done.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think that it's with him, he always had that kind of, he presented very well. Like, he seemed like a respectable guy. You know, outwardly, he was. And so the idea that, and, you know, what he actually advocated for was, I think, you know, a Romney presidency and a Trump presidency would have been policy-wise probably not very different. But tonally, this is just the opposite of his whole thing. And so, like, I do think that that's mostly what is offensive about it. You know, the idea of, like, they both would have cut taxes for rich people as a first ordinance in this kind of garish way where there's a lot of, like, bunting and, you know, a bathing suit contest, whereas Mitt Romney would have made it look like a, you know, a smart, considered decision. To me, if it all ends up in the same place, I don't really know what any of those aesthetic differences are worth.
Mm. Well, they've said that as a rule, people who have pets are more compassionate. We know Trump never had one. Does Romney get a pass even though he put his on top of the car in the carrier for trips?
I was going to say that, like, it turns out that there is actually something worse than not having a pet in this case. That there's a secret third Mitt Romney option that is considerably more unappealing than any of the other stuff we talked about. So I guess you got to give him credit for that. Pretty normal Republican, but he did really innovate in that one space.
Along similar lines, it's not great for the country, but I'm kind of enjoying seeing Kevin McCarthy twist in the wind this quickly.
It's tough. I mean, I think we're going to, I mean, I can't really tell what any of this is going to amount to, but him having to work at the behest of, like, the 18 craziest people in his party, all of whom are, I think, like, basically in office because the voters of their district got together and were like, is there some way that we can get Lauren Boebert out of here for 9 months out of the year? Is there a way that we can guarantee that she'll never be here on a weekday? And that is what, so now those people are his boss and he has to do more or less what they say. They haven't even been able to figure out what it is that they're trying to run this indictment on. that it's all based on stuff that you need a decoder ring. Like, if you don't watch 20 hours of Fox News a day, it's impossible to tell what the actual cause of action is going to wind up being here. But he's got to play it out, which, you know, again, it's like David Culley coaching the Texans. Like, congratulations to you, man. Speaker of the House. How does it feel? My guess is pretty lousy.
Then down in Florida, you can always count on Ron DeSantis. Let's do exactly the opposite of what the government, the CDC, and any respectable medical experts suggest. No, do not. Whatever you do, do not take this new COVID vaccine, because we didn't kill enough Floridians the last time.
This is such a... I feel like this happens every time there is a presidential cycle, that some jumped-up goofball governor... reactionary type does something that amounts to this. I mean, DeSantis is different because it has this extra, you know, valence with it, and he's like 25% more annoying than any other candidate, which is, I think, maybe not as much of a strength as he figured it would be. But all of it in the past, I remember Bobby Jindal doing similar stuff in Louisiana, and there's something especially dark about it, the idea of being like, all right, well, you're going to you're certainly not going to prevent a few thousand deaths, and you're doing this so that you can come in fourth in Iowa and then drop out. Like, that's what it's worth. Like, it really does put a pretty fine point on all of this. And I mean, I'll say this too, as somebody who like recently had COVID, like, it still sucks. Even if it's not going to kill you, if you can give me a free shot that I can take that will make it less likely that I'll get it, like, I'll definitely take that. I didn't enjoy disrupting my life, and I didn't enjoy feeling sick for a week. Like, this isn't complicated. So the idea that all of this somehow, you know, is a football that you can toss around to your advantage is, I mean, beyond being irresponsible and stuff, it just feels to me like a losing move. Like, you're pandering to people that are fundamentally unappeasable, and I think all normal people, however many of those we've got left in our culture, are going to look at this and get faintly nauseated.
I think the Jindal comparison is a really good one. Yeah. And I really do feel like DeSantis is going to end up in the same boat. I mean, we haven't heard anything from Bobby in a decade almost now.
No, I mean, I feel like he's like lobbying or, you know, probably, but which is fine. I mean, none of these guys really care about the job. I mean, it seems like a pretty important job, but it seems like every governor views that as not a terminal position, that it is like a sort of a stepping stone, which is, you know, it's a weird thing too, because I feel like one thing that I would have to, you know, check this, and I'm on the radio, so I can't do it right now. If Bobby Jindal lived in Louisiana right now, I would be a little bit surprised. Like, I feel like all of these guys, once they've basically hit their ceiling and realized that they're only going to, you know, be able to do so much, that at that point, like, what's left for Bobby Jindal there? You know, like, he already showed what he thought of Louisiana when he was the governor of it. He's not, like, he doesn't have any business left there. So that's where, you know, if it turned out that he was in, like, Palm Beach, just sitting on a boat all the time, like, that would not surprise me in the least.
David Roth of Defector, the Distraction Podcast, with us. Hey, David, great to talk with you as always. Appreciate you making time with us this afternoon. And yes, prepare yourself, because the next time you're on, it'll just be me immediately on the other end of that phone.
Well, it's been a pleasure working with you, Kerry, and I look forward to the pure, uncut Rich Kimball experience in the future, too. If you can prepare yourself for it, I'm going to start preparing myself for it. And obviously, good luck to all of you guys with Lee. I wish you the best.
Thanks, man.
Thanks so much, David. David Roth with us here on Downtown.